SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
So 964, if you're listening to SiriusXM online, and at our website too, stevebick.com, and we have got a lot to do, obviously, this morning with the opening day at Keeneland and with day two of the Preakness weekend after yesterday's big performance from Yaupin, winning the Chick Lang, plus the turf sprints, and everything else, Belmont, etc. We've got a parade of handicapping to do, but we're going to start with hard news. And, Case, I don't know if you're getting the things I've sent you, but Keith Shamblin is going to join us immediately here to open the show with breaking news. And this is going to affect a lot of players. We're going to get the details from Keith, and the NHC scheduled a course for Vegas in February, and the staff at NTRA and the plans and you know, the monitoring of the situation, you know, nationwide, worldwide, obviously. Some decisions being made, and we'll have Keith. Maybe try him on the cell then instead. That's the office line, the landline. So maybe you're better off with the cell. All right. Let me send you a different one then. It's unbelievable. Just amazing. Whenever you need to get something done on, you know, on, on scheduled timing. Try that then, all right? As we wait for a minute here for Keith, mentioned the action yesterday at Pimlico, and Yaupin kind of picking up for the Asmussen Barn, where Volatile leaving the stage. So Yaupin at 3-5 was in control early, and yeah, that's funny. He doesn't break like a shot, but he gets his feet under him, and there was a little bit of tussle, but he doesn't. Johnny even mentioned this after the race. So Yaupin, very, very solid and pretty much what you expected. 99 buyer for the three-year-old. And, of course, three-year-olds have a good history. Three-year-olds have a very good history, historic Breeders' Cup-wise. So why not, right? The sprint division, by the way, also lost Promises Fulfilled yesterday, retired officially. And that was sort of coming. We'll get that piece of news in right after we talk to, and much more, after we talk to Keith Shamblin. Keith, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
I didn't want to take away the news. I was leaving it to you, but certainly NHC qualifiers and those still hoping to qualify, everybody kind of anticipating that there might be some decisions that needed to be made. Tell everybody what the plans are.
Well, we had communicated several months ago with our tour membership and horse players, other horse players, about a decision regarding the 2021 NHC, and we promised horse players that we would have an update by Breeders' Cup. And but we'd also said that as soon as we could communicate more, we would, and that's what we're doing today, which is communicating that we're pushing the 2021 NHC back from an original date of February 12th through 14th, which is about 130 days from now. We're pushing that date back to August 27th through 29th. In 2021, we're not ready to give up on trying to host a live event in 2021. We're going to do everything we possibly can to work with our partners at Bally's to host an NHC. And the first thing we needed to do was secure a date on the calendar for a newly scheduled NHC. We've done that now. We'll announce that today. There's a lot of questions out there about how we can pull this off, what protocols will be undertaken to ensure the safety of our guests and their other visitors, along with our staff who works the event. And we'll be working through all those issues over the coming months. But We knew we weren't going to be able to have a great deal of confidence in attracting people to an event that was in February. So now we've set the date, August 27th through 29th, gives us some extra time. It's 329 days away from now. Hopefully, God willing, the world will be in a better place by then.
As part of this, Keith, any other timetables affected, or does the existing schedule and then actually the initial qualifications for 2022 explain how it affects the potential overlap and those ramifications?
Yes, we discussed all of that and whether or not we wanted to continue qualifying into 2021 right up until August, the August date. Because of the tour, the rules, which have already been tweaked slightly due to the fact that we've lost so many on-track tournaments throughout 2020, that we made minor changes to tour scoring and so forth. We felt it was important to conclude the tour on its regularly scheduled date. That'll be January 23rd. 2021 will conclude the NHC tour. We do anticipate that we'll have fewer participants at the August event, that were the newly announced event. But we also anticipate we'll have a higher purse at the August event in 2021. So, but no change to the tour schedule. It will continue through January 23rd, 2021, then we'll start a new season. And at least for now, we anticipate reverting back to February schedule for the NHC beginning in February 2022. I'm sure there are going to be some people that are going to look at the change in calendar and welcome, and probably everyone who's already qualified for next year's NHC will welcome the news that we've pushed it back to August. I think some will like the summer date, whether they've already qualified or they're continuing to try to qualify and hope to be there next August. I think they'll like the racing. Obviously, that will include Saratoga and Del Mar. In fact, to include what I consider to be one of the best racing days of the year in the world, and that would be Travers Day, or at least that's the traditional date of the Travers. So if you can't be at Saratoga, I can't think of a better place to be than in Las Vegas with a bunch of horse players watching those spectacular races on big screens. And it really is one of my favorite days, along with the Belmont and the Breeders' Cup. It's one of my favorite days of the year, racing-wise. And I'm sure a lot of people will come out of that August event, knock on wood, provided we can carry it out. And people wish that we remain with the summer schedule. But At least the plan right now is to just continue to work through this extraordinary year that's called 2020 and host an NHC in 2021. We'll worry about the out years later.
Any consideration or potential for remote participation if this rescheduling runs afoul for some people and not knowing where we stand that far out. And I suppose even the remote elements might have been considered for the February date. I mean, talk about some of those logistic issues and, what might still be open-ended at this point.
Well, you're right. A lot is open-ended at this point, and we're not going to shy away from any of the questions in our communications to tour members and about where we are, and the reality of the situation is there are a lot of unknowns at this point. We had discussed the possibility of moving the February event to a purely online event. Obviously, that had major ramifications with our partners at Bally's and Caesars Entertainment. But, they understand that. They were willing to work with us on a new date to push the event back, several hundred days beyond the February date, or at least pushed it back another 100, more than 100 days. But we're not ready to make that decision yet. If we have to do that, we will. We'll be prepared to. But we have a players committee of about 16 horse players, evenly spread around the country, and we think they're pretty representative of typical tour players. Some of our best, some of our committee members of some of our very best players. Others play relatively infrequently. So we had a representative sample that we spoke to. We talked about the possibility of moving it online. I think the consensus, we also talked about just postponing it, moving everything to 2022 and pushing all the money, the purse money, which will be a record, we believe, to 2022, and at the end of the day, we're not ready to do that right now. We want to continue to work with our partners at Bally's. We want to try to see, try to help Las Vegas come back at whatever point we possibly can. We're not ready to go there in February, but we're hopeful that by August we'll be able to host this event in a safe environment. And have the proper health and safety protocols in place for a live event. But, we can control just about everything, but we can't control this damn pandemic. And we just have to wait and see how things unfold over the next several months and then pivot accordingly. We had talked at one time about the possibility of doing a hybrid tournament. We're not even sure that would be legal in the state of Nevada, but we'll be looking at everything. Everything will be on the table. And, of course, our goal is to host a live audience in Las Vegas, for what, as you know, has been annually a kind of a celebration of the horse player. These are crazy times, and we'll do whatever we possibly have to ensure the safety of our participants. And if that means changes to the rules, the format, the location, then we'll take each of those issues on one at a time and make the appropriate decision. But for now, we wanted to just let people know there will not be an event in February, and that we've secured a date on the calendar in late August, and that's about the best we thought we could do. There were other dates available to us in earlier in the summer. We could have gone in July, but we think we'll need every bit of all of July and most of August to ensure the best possible chance of hosting a live event. Whether or not we can pull it off, that remains to be seen. But the first step was really securing this date, and we've got that. And we're appreciative to Bally's for working with us. And now we'll move forward on trying to address some of these other issues, including what we'll do if there are individuals who have already qualified and might feel uncomfortable coming to an August event in Las Vegas. We'll have to address that. We'll be prepared to. We've had policies in place before that, these berths are non-transferable. They're you must be present to participate, and these have been hard and fast rules that have been in place for more than 20 years. But like everything else, things might have to change in due to this pandemic, and as it relates to at least the 2021 NHC. So we'll be working through all those issues. Again, we don't have all the answers right now. I think we've identified many of the challenges, but the first thing we needed to do was set a date and kind of lock it in, and now we can move toward that date and see how everything plays out over the next 6 months or so.
One thing, and it hadn't occurred to me until hearing some of these details, I had seen, it must be now 60 days ago, where the Caesars properties had mentioned that Bally's was going to be one of the last of their properties, if not the last, in Vegas to be retrofitted with the precaution elements to open the hotel and the gaming area and restaurants, etc. I suppose some of that must have entered into this as well.
Did, but see, Bally's opened in July, and they're back operating. They are hosting conventions in Las Vegas. They've currently the properties have a cap on the size of those conventions that they're hosting, but they are back and operationally. They're back and open. I think the only property that remains to be opened at that Caesars operates is the Cromwell, but all of their other properties on the Strip have reopened, and they're trying to move toward some sense of whatever the new normalcy is. That's what they're moving toward. But we didn't feel that we were going to be prepared to bring a group of some 600 individuals to Las Vegas in early February.
And sure.
We think with the new date, at least there's a chance to host this event in a way more typical and similar to the ways we've done it in the past. There are still many, many obstacles that we have to address, and believe me, when we'll be working every day to do the best we can to make everybody feel comfortable about this new date. That's where we're at for right now, and we'll see how things play out. And again, there's what we can't control is this pandemic, and
sure,
as we've just learned in the last 12 hours or so, nobody is immune to what's happening. So we'll just see where we go from here. But that's our goal right now, and then hopefully we can pull it off. And if we can't, we'll pivot and we'll do what we have to do to make things right for our players.
Well, a couple of early reactions already as players getting the news, and I see that the email has gone out to everybody that's on the NTRA NHC mailing list, and reactions. One interesting element, and it absolutely is going to be addressed immediately, is how different the menu, the wagering menu, and it's not limited, frankly, to Saratoga and Del Mar. You know, certainly California and New York players are, you know, they're going to be as comfortable, you know, playing the Southern Cal and upstate Oval. But there, you know, no fairgrounds, no Oaklawn, no Tampa. Instead, you know, the summer racetracks will be on display, and so there's going to be some players that I think will be, you know, will be really pleased, actually, and it might lift their heads a little bit. You know, they go to Vegas and they say, well, I don't really play this time of year, and I hear some of those mumbling. So I think that's going to be well received, and certainly everybody understands, Keith. Let's give we have Casey just got a call asking about, again, the original deadlines are going to be unchanged. So essentially, you know, we're playing through the end of January. I suppose you know, the last chance, will there be a last chance, first chance in August as well, ahead of the 27th?
I think there will be. I mean, one thing we don't know is how the 2021-2022 tour season will be impacted by kicking this event back to August. We're hopeful that it will only impact those 650 individuals who qualify to the 2021 NHC. No one else will be impacted because there's no extension to continuation of the tour season any further into the next year than there typically would be. But it's still an unknown. I anticipate that we'll be announcing last chance tournaments in front of an August event once we get into the countdown clock and we get a go for a August event, a live event in Las Vegas, that there will be some last chance qualifying, just if for no other reason to stoke interest in contests. And so I think a lot of what typically would occur for a February event can occur for an August event and a lead up to the August event. So my response right now would be, we anticipate that we'll have some last chance qualifying, even nice. Though it'll occur in the summertime.
And as of right now, what's the latest date on the calendar? I'm just going to go pull up the schedule.
Well, the tour season will officially end January 23rd.
Okay.
with an online tournament. So that will not change. The tour season will not change. Will not be impacted by this date change for the NHC. But again, I think you're right. I think a lot of people will like the change in the racing, the quality of the racing, the fact that we were much, much less likely to be impacted by cancellations. We'll always have the threat of, in places like New York, of having unseasonable weather, rainy weather, and losing racing from the turf. But I think we're much, much, much less likely to have an actual track cancellation in August than we would be in February, and that's kind of always looming out there. And
it's sure
put together mandatory races and look at the menu of races available. Everybody's also always looking at the weather in February, and hopefully that won't be the case any longer as it relates to this August event.
The 2021 National Horse Players Championship rescheduled from early February to Travers Week, essentially, and That just occurring to me, actually, that I'm letting that sink in for a second here. That the fact that it was Travers Week, I hadn't really mentally addressed that. I suppose.
Me neither.
Well, I think actually, if there's a year to be able to go to Del Mar in the summer, this will be the one. This could be the tie-in to be able to get to Del Mar during the summer season, as opposed to just the Bing Crosby season and Breeders' Cup. Even though we'll be back again in November of 2021 at Del Mar, but a West Coast trip in August. All right, I'm committing now.
There you go. I appreciate that. I promised myself a couple of years ago that I would never miss another Travers Day at Saratoga because of how great a race card it was. But it looks like we're going to have to push that back at least one more year. But again, in weighing the pros and cons, and we do recognize that a lot of fans do attend both Del Mar and Saratoga and Monmouth and elsewhere during these popular summer meets, but we just felt we needed the extra what turns out to be nearly 60 days to have the best chance of hosting a live event in Las Vegas in 2021, and we were really looking at a window of opportunity really at some point after July 4th. But before Labor Day, when college and professional football really take over the landscape and take over the race books and the race book operators' attention in Las Vegas. And we've pushed, we've pushed this all the way to the brink of college and professional football season.
Right.
This
right.
Late August date. And that was our goal. And we're thrilled to have the opportunity to move to those dates, and we think that gives us the best chance to host a live event. Doesn't mean it's possible or it will take place, but it gives us the best chance to host a live NHC, and that's what our goal continues to be. Whether or not we have to pivot from that ultimate goal remains to be seen, but this is the first step.
Keith Shamblin with us from NTRA, and Keith, I appreciate the opportunity to get this out there and flesh out the details. And actually, we'll talk later this morning. Nick Tamara will be here, and we'll get Nick's reaction. Paul Matisse likely to join us today as well. So we'll get boosting. I guess for Duke, well, Duke usually comes to Saratoga for the first few weeks. It's sort of a quasi home game for Duke under these circumstances. I'm anxious to hear the Matisse family reaction, and we'll see, out in the public how this is received. I do want to take the opportunity. I talked about it, I guess it's got to be 10, 12 days ago now, the passing of your father, and really a lifetime of service to the industry, instrumental in so many areas, and for horse players and fans and stakeholders. I wanted to express sympathies to you and your siblings and your mom and everybody. Tony Shamblin, 81.
Well, he lived a very, I appreciate that. He lived a very rich and full life. He loved horse racing. He loved journalism. And, what I'm finding out is he was a mentor and helped a lot of people get into the sport, which gives me a great deal of pride. And he certainly knew how important policies in Washington could impact the industry. He knew that, understood that early on, and some of his biggest accomplishments, and I think they occurred through federal legislation, and I think none bigger then he was most proud, I think, of the Interstate Horse Racing Act and what it meant to owners and horsemen, and you know, just how it stood the test of time and you know, impacted us through just billions and billions of dollars in purse money over the years. So he lived a terrific life, and just his great mentor and father. So
you know, his the obit was enlightening in a lot of ways, and some of the things I read, including his early career. I mean, he went in terms of school, he went, you know, for a liberal arts education, and ended up as a very youthful sports editor at the Courier Press in Evansville.
No amazing. Doubt where he actually met Bill Christine, the longtime writer for the Los Angeles Times, and that was the heyday for the Evansville Courier and Press, and the Big Ten. He covered Dick Butkus, and Jerry Sloan was a player for the Evansville. They had a great basketball team.
Sure.
He covered Cassius Clay. In fact, he wrote a column that said that if Cassius Clay beats Sonny Liston, I'll ride a donkey down Main Street. Well, he rode a donkey down Main Street.
Did he really?
And,
oh, my God.
And he also got introduced to another Louisville icon, and that was or tradition, and that was the Kentucky Derby, and that really led to his falling in love with horse racing and a whole other career.
Amazing. But, I mean, he didn't have a legal background or, you know, any of the elements that it's fascinating to me that he segued, in, you know, into that role. I mean, the racetrack management was one thing, but, you know, the basically being savvy in all these different areas, the benefits of a liberal arts education, that he was able to understand what was happening in the simulcast development period, and you know, create the foundation, you know, with the IHA, you know, the basis of which you know, the sport, you know, really flourished off of, and the underpinnings of, you know, the ADW system as we know it.
Yes, truly, it was amazing, but he loved the game. He loved to handicap. He was trying to figure that out till the very end. He hosted a Kentucky Derby party in over Labor Day weekend, and he ran the Calcutta. So it was he was trying to pick a winner right up until the end, and no, he did not have this year's Derby winner.
Well, Keith, I appreciate it, and there's actually been a couple of horseman passings I've got to include today as well, but I couldn't miss the opportunity for you to pay tribute, and his memory will live on and his contributions to the sport. Keith, I appreciate this. There's certainly a litany of things we could bring up right now, but we're going to handicap the next 2.5 hours on this big weekend, the NHC in August, and everybody will make the requisite adjustments.
Thank you very much, Steve. We'll keep you updated as time goes on and we make further decisions.
Keith Shamblin, everybody, of the NTRA and NHC, National Horse Players Championship, August 27th, 28th, 29th at Bally's. I guess we'll be able to, you know, get our bets in on the first week of the NFL and things like that. So
there you go.
I love it. Thanks, Keith.
All right. Thank you.
We're going to stay here and standing by, bottom of the hour, James Scully. And we'll start right in on the weekend. It's opening day at Keeneland. James, good morning.
Yes, good morning, Steve. Opening day at Keeneland, man. I'll tell you, little bit sad I won't be out there, but always look forward to this day. Glad that the October meet's here. And, yeah, you said it, 18 graded stakes on Saturday. Got a couple of great events at Keeneland today, one at Pimlico. So lots of good racing this weekend. Excited to talk about it with you.
Let's clean out Friday very quickly for those that are listening live, and any opinions, Pimlico Special, and of course the Phoenix and the Alcibiades. I heard from Ron Paolucci already this morning, and because I had speculated what he was going to do with Mo, Don't Know. They're going to scratch from tomorrow's Kelso in New York. They will run Mo, Don't Know, with Corrales in the Phoenix today. And he's actually a fit in the Phoenix. It's a terrific group of 12. And then I thought the Alcibiades was really difficult. These are lightly raced fillies. Let's start there. The grade one, McPeak with a trio, and they all have appeal in one way or another. And I thought that was as tough a group to decipher as you were going to see with two-year-olds.
Yeah, nice seven-horse field. I do like the Alcibiades better, though, from the Phoenix, just in terms of, like, coming up with a top pick. Because one thing about the McPeak fillies, two of them, especially Crazy Beautiful, they're more, like, off-the-pace type. I did not think this race had that much speed. I thought drawing the rail hurt thoughtfully, because I think Travel Column is going to make the front from post two. I really liked her win on the Kentucky Oaks undercard, a Frosted Philly for Larry Best and Brad Cox. And I just think her speed is going to play so well in this spot from post two with Laurent Giroux. I look at McPeak's third filly, the seven, Simply Ravishing. I mean, she's key to the pace. That was a four-horse field last time in that off-the-turf PG Johnson, but she did show speed in our debut on turf, even though it was slow pace. And I really think, you know, Saez being aboard Simply Ravishing, he needs to sort of go, especially to help his stablemate, Crazy Beautiful, who's going to be rolling late. Really, three good efforts from Crazy Beautiful so far, Steve.
Well, you know, you've got Travel Column, who stretching out, it certainly is going to be speed. Santana, I don't think Santana's crushed by having to negotiate the rail, but you know, he's got to get out at least and gain position. Of the McPeaks, the horse that's really interesting to me is the long shot, that Olivia of the Desert has closed into very slow paces. And has gotten, you know, built a nice record already, and has got experience. But every pace that she's dealt with has been slow, and not necessarily a fast pace here. But that's usually the sign of a nice horse. And I thought, you know, at a price and going to Lannery, I thought there was a little intrigue with Olivia of the Desert. It's my kind of horse to kind of come pick up a piece third or fourth. You know, kind of a reverse tri-key horse. I haven't put my tickets up yet. I really struggled with this, and I think this thing is, I think it requires a wide net. I don't see how much separation between, you know, really the entire group. I mean, yes, Extrema and Olivia of the Desert are less likely. Even Gramercy. What's wrong with Gramercy? You know, certainly bred to take to the dirt. Picks up Rosario. I think it's a very mysterious set of seven. Nothing's going to surprise me in this, James.
One thing about Crazy Beautiful, too, is I thought, you know, she got stymied in traffic last time.
Yep.
You know, and she really, even though she's ninth in those early stages at Pocahontas, I mean, they were rip-roaring in that race, 44 and change, she wasn't that far back. So, theoretically, in this seven-horse field, Alcibiades, if she can stay within striking range, she can make her move on the turn. I do think she's a big-time threat, but I am going to go with Travel Call Wire to Wire, Steve.
All right, that certainly makes sense. I would think that Simply Ravishing and Saez are, you know, keep her in eyesight.
And one thing about Travel Column, just I'll mention it just for everybody, the filly she beat last time, Off We Go, she's in race five for Amos, so you can get a little bit of a you know, a God for how good that race was by how Off We Go runs in the fifth race today, Keeneland. Turning to the Phoenix, Steve, really, I thought a compelling race, good contest. I'm intrigued by Diamond Oops. I just think there appears to be a fair amount of speed signed on in this race. And I'll just say this about Yaupon yesterday. I love the decision to run in that chick lane because you mentioned it with these three-year-olds faring so well in past Breeders' Cup sprints. I didn't see any need for that colt to be in this field banging heads with no parole before having to come back 4 weeks later and deal with other speed in the Breeders' Cup sprint. So I love that decision. I thought that was a really nice race. And yeah, he could run huge and right back at Keeneland in November. But in the Phoenix on Saturday, Diamond Oops, you know, always been a hard one of the most versatile horses, I think, in training. You know, he ran got beat less than a length running second in the 1 mile, in the Shadwell Turf Mile last year at Keeneland, and came back this year on the dirt. He won the Mr. Prospector Grade 3, ran fourth going a mile and an eighth in the Pegasus World Cup, and then I thought that was a tremendous effort. He had trained so forwardly for that turf sprint on Kentucky Oaks Day, was pretty far back in the early going, came flying up the rail. I just think he's going to be tough to beat in here. The other horse I want to use with Diamond Oops in my multi on my tickets. Obviously, I respect Whitmore in here, and I respect a couple others in here, but Echo Town in here. But Lexingtonian to me, Steve, I love seeing this colt draw an outside post. He's been in post 1 and 3 in those last two races. He got triple-digit speed ratings, ran a big race in the Bing Crosby. But last year in the Phoenix from post 9, he ran a bang-up race. He runs back to that effort. He's going to be tough once again, and I think he's in an even better form this year for Jack Sisterson. So, to me, I'm going Dominance Lexingtonian in the Phoenix.
I picked Whitmore. This is his fourth straight Phoenix, and of course he won it 3 years ago. He's been second the last 2 years, and he's just as consistent as you can get. And I just think he's, he's the kind of the right horse to kind of lean on for a typical A race. I completely agree about Lexingtonian. Diamond Oops to me is a protect. He's going to be a B or a C when I put the tickets together. The horse that I want to get involved is Echo Town. And 8-1 on the morning line, and I think we might end up getting all of that. And they tried the Pathé Mile, which you can understand off the Jerkins, now cuts back to a sprint distance, an authentic sprint distance, and there's going to be that same pace for him. And so I'm going to use Echo Town as an A or a B. And of the speed horses, Wes Hawley, what a claim absolutely Aiden has been, and he's got absolutely Aiden as good as he's ever been. And I being inside, he's the speed of the speed, but at the same time, he has shown a little bit of an ability to sit as well. And so if there's one of the speed horses that stays on, I thought it might be absolutely Aiden. So I went in order of preference. I went 3-6-9-2.
I'll just say I agree with your thoughts about Echo Town. I like to cut back to 6 furlongs as well. I think he's 6 furlongs is his best distance. But if you're talking about speed, I think No Parole. I think he's going to be the one to catch. I just think he's brilliant from the starting gate, and I'm willing to excuse that Jerkins last time off such a big race in the Woody Stevens, in a sense. I don't know if he can do it, but he's at least the kind of horse that I'm going to save with, because I wouldn't want to get beat wire to wire with No Parole.
Let's slip in the Pimlico Special before we look at Keeneland Saturday card.
Yeah, I'm still going to do some work. I'm not too sure about the track up there with the Pimlico Special, so I didn't really have a strong opinion in there, Steve.
Okay, all right. We'll save it, and maybe I'll get it up with later with Nick, and we'll also be talking to Dave Grenig. A couple of interesting it's a good race. You got the defending winner. You've got our friend Someday Jones, our friend Will Schwartz, and I tell you what's interesting to me. Down on the rail is a cord maker. Rodney Jenkins was a fast closing third in this last year and is coming into it off a very good effort in the deputed testimony. So there's some prices to play with. It's a good addition of the special. Let's turn to Saturday then, James, and dive into the sequence, the stakes sequence at Keeneland.
All right, definitely. The stakes sequence kicked off in race number six, the Woodford Stakes, 5.5 furlongs on turf. You're going to have Leinster makes his first start back since winning the Shakertown in July. Really, loves Keeneland. He's going to be tough as nails in here, you would think, for Rusty Arnold. But I'm going to go with, I've been on him a bunch of times, Steve. Always been intrigued with him. And I thought he ran a good race, just might, in the turf sprint. I think his speed is he's finally caught a race where there is not this just a tremendous amount of early speed signed on in this field. And if Kobe Hernandez can get this horse out there, that was a pretty good effort last time. He's dangerous to me. He's 5-1 on the morning line. I think we'll get every bit of that with Just Might. So I'm going to give him the slight edge, but obviously I would use Leinster in any kind of multi-race bets as well.
Well, and Fast Boat, who kind of was a little bit of a talking horse going into the Shakertown off that big allowance win at Churchill, and got to consider him Extravagant Kid, always always consistent, and
I did not like Extravagant Kid drew that rail in that Shakertown in July. And it just got off to such a terrible start. I don't think he's going to like being down there. He's got 3 starts at Keeneland, no wins, no seconds. He loves that Churchill turf, but I think he's just a little bit better there.
If you're looking for a price in here and a horse from off the pace that could pick up something late, Chaps for Eddie Keneally.
Yeah.
Caught my eye.
Definitely was a, he was weaving in and out in that race there and definitely was flying late. So the next deck race is the Thoroughbred Club of America. Sneaking out is shipping in there. I didn't think that rail post really helps her too much. Gonna probably try, I won't be surprised to see her prove best because she has gotten so good, this Calbred filly for Jerry Hollendorfer. But I like number 5, Palace Avenger, C for Wesley Ward. She hasn't beaten perhaps the deepest company in her last 2 races, but I think she's done it the right way. I think she's improving. I like the outside draw, and she's going to be on the engine from the start with Luis Saez. So I'm going to give the advantage in the TCA Thoroughbred Club of America to Palace Avenger.
Palace Avenger, and just looking outside, because I hadn't really looked at the prices. Ladies Island will be winging. The veteran mare, Danny Gargan, has her. She ran very well in the Honorable Miss and got nailed late by Come Dancing. There's a fair amount of pace, actually.
Yeah, for sure. Even that Dos Vinos place to go and others.
Sneaking Out's got speed inside for Dorf. So.
Yeah. I mean, gosh. Indian Evening she is by, and really just gotten a lot better this year. But I do think, you look at Sneaking Out, she was in at Oaklawn over the winter, and he ran her in the winning colors from the rail. And I'm always leery of horses that don't run well from the – I mentioned it with that Extravagant Kid. Don't run well on the from rail post coming back and at short odds breaking from the rail. It's always like a negative for me, Steve. Race is – Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah, next race, the First Lady. Really, and I think it's encouraging for newspaper record. I mean, she's looked like absolutely gone at the top of the stretch in the Distaff Turf Mile. I give Beau Recall plenty of credit for running her down like she did. But I do think it's encouraging to see newspaper record come right back 4 weeks later in this spot for Chad Brown. I mean, she just looks like lone speed to me in this field and best most likely winner in a sense. But if for some reason she doesn't have it anymore, and just doesn't show up with her race. The horse I would look to include, you know, save with is number 3, Daddy Is a Legend. I thought that, you know, last year she ended the year really on a good note for Weaver, transferred this year, you know, to Rusty Arnold, came back, didn't run any good on the soft turf at Ellis Park. But last time, you know, really, once again, she's drawn inside, was far back and dead last early, only gets beat 5 lengths. I just look at that effort as a tightener. She likes Keeneland's turf, has run well here before, and I think, you know, she's got a chance to move up. I mean, I like Daddy as a Legend a little bit better than Beau Recall, who's another one to me who she loves Churchill. I'm not sure about her affinity for Keeneland, and Uni, who I just did not like her effort in the 4-star days, Steve. I'm willing to try to beat her for sure tomorrow in the First Lady.
Fair enough. And as you mentioned, there's not a tremendous amount of speed. Although, you know, Crystal Lake's presence in here, coming out the sprint, you would think that she just, you know, just by natural, you know, her natural speed puts her kind of lapped on a little bit or in close contact with the Newspaper of Record. So it's not like Dalica is not without some lick either. Certainly based off of that race at Kentucky Downs where she, you know, suddenly found herself after a series of races where she didn't show speed, you know, earlier in her career. Very strange, actually. And, you know, it served her well in the One Dreamer.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I was surprised. I mean, when I was surprised to see her, you know, run so well off of those, her two previous efforts, you know, stretching out as well. Those sprint races look like did her good. So, it's an interesting field for sure. But I do think Newspaper Record is capable of being at least a length in front, you would think, just with her quickness. That brings us to the, the Claiborne Farm Breeders' Futurity Grade 1, winning your end for the Breeders' Cup, Kentucky Rose, the Kentucky Derby Series points qualifier. Got a good non-horse field in here, Steve. A lot of last-out maiden winners in the field to choose from. A couple with stakes experience. I'm not for any of those horses. I wound up landing on Essential Quality for Godolphin and Brad Cox. Really thought that last time was in a tough spot and down on the inside in mid-stretch. Liked the way he just like worked, his, extracted himself from trouble and won going away that day. A horse that just looks like to me has a really big future. The other horse in there that I actually did like his effort, and you know, Founder's going to take money here off of that win in the mud. That's the kind of F rates I'm going to try to play against with him. You know, Calibrate scares me for sure off of his sharp win on the Alabama Stakes undercard at Saratoga. But I was impressed by King Fury's race. I thought that was a really powerful finish. I think he could get overlooked a little bit among these last-out maiden winners. And here he's 12-1 on the morning line. So that would be my B selection, my second pick. I'm on Essential Quality for the win, Steve.
I've got to sift through this a little bit more because there's even though, you know, there were a few here that we, you know, we saw at Saratoga, the pair, there's just some horses I'm just not as familiar with, and I want to watch a couple of replays yet to get like that Upstriker from Moquette. Moquette beat me the other day at Indiana out of a nice multi. So I'm not letting Moquette, you know, take me out at the knees. I want to look at this a little bit more.
All right. And then we can move on to the Shadwell Turf Mile, the feature on the opening day program. I thought it was, didn't have like any, you know, perhaps real big stars, but that makes for a good betting race. Halliday I mean, looks tough as nails. I'll definitely have him on multi-race tickets off of that win in the four-star Dave. I have a ton of respect for a couple of Chad Browns. I think he's got like three or four. Analyze it. Ran such a big race coming back in the Red Bank. I won't be surprised to see him run well. And I like Raging Bull a little bit coming back to Keeneland, taking the blinkers off. I thought he ran a lot better than without Prohl and that four-star Dave at stablemate. So, you know, those are three that horses I look to include. But my top pick in here is number one, Casa Creed for Bill Mott. And this is a horse last year who finally put it all together, Casa Creed, when he won the Hall of Fame Stakes at Saratoga in early August. I mean, didn't beat that big a good a field, but at least earned his first stakes win. And he wasn't seen again until May. He came back in like a stakes quality allowance at Churchill Downs. Ran, I thought, a solid third that afternoon off the long layoff. And then in the wide stand next out, really made a good move into contentioning just and just weekend late. Just came up a little bit short, but I saw that as a step forward. I thought that was another good effort. And then the four-star Dave last time, you know, couldn't catch the top two, Halliday and got stormy, but finished the clear third. He's just moving forward to me. He's going to get a ground-saving trip on the inside. I think there's some the potential for Halliday, you know, to really catch some pressure in here from the outside, and I just think Casa Creed's dangerous. He's 12-1 on the morning line. I think he's poised to keep moving forward, like I said, for Bill Mott, Steve.
Well, I certainly would be thrilled. Our friend Lee Einsiedler, and Lee is actually going to head to Kentucky tomorrow for the race, and he's actually got he's got Repo Rocks, I think, on running on Sunday as well. And it would be wonderful for Lee, who's powering through a really difficult situation family-wise, and rooting for as happy an outcome as possible for him this weekend, lift his and the family's spirits. So Godspeed, Casa Creed.
All right. Yeah, so that's I'll give you a couple quick Pimlico thoughts and one last horse for today, Keeneland, if that's okay, Steve.
Sure.
I'll just start right with the Preakness. I think my top pick in there is Art Collector. I think the pace scenario is going to be fascinating in the Preakness with Art Collector, Swiss Skydiver, Thousand Words, even, you know, all drawn to the inside and Authentic on the outside. Now, there's still a good chance in my mind that Authentic is going to make the lead, come bounding out of the gate, be showing the way. But even if he's sitting second, I may have made this point with you before. He may still be good enough to win. War Emblem led wire to wire in the 2002 Derby for Bob Baffert, came back, was tracking the pace in second until the far turn in the Preakness. So I'm not too worried about whether or not Authentic has everything his own way or not, but I am a little bit worried about a step back off of that Derby because, you know, that Haskell was a big concern, you know, for obviously for observers, but for Bob Baffert himself, I think he trained the colt so hard for the Derby that there is the potential for a regression. He might be able to take a step back and still win, but I think Art Collector missing that Derby because of that minor foot issue was a blessing in disguise for Art Collector because he was going to have to come back off of a three-week layoff following back-to-back big stakes wins. Now he'll have 7 weeks. He got three works in the four-week freshening from the first September 5th until now. And I just think he's going to be sitting on a big effort. Brian Hernandez, I have faith in him working out a good trip from post three, and I'm going to give the edge to Art Collector and the Preakness. The one late runner I like, I'm going to go with Max Player because, to me, Max Player does not like to be inside horses taking any kickback. He broke from post one in that Derby. I thought that was a better than it looked fifth, considering all the work that Santana had to do that day to get him out of trouble. Now he's in post eight. He's going to get the right setup. I like him best of the off-the-pace horses. So I'm going with Art Collector to win, and Max Player would be my, like, upset horse.
How about last-minute Friday push and an NFL play for the weekend.
You got it. Last Minute Friday push, last race today at Keeneland, race 10 at the mile and the 16th, two-year-old maiden race. Number six, Bryce Canyon, Godolphin homebred. His dam won her first. This is our first foal, Bryce Canyon. Her dam is a half-sister to unbeaten Group 1 winner White Moonstone. She won her first turf start. The family's all turf. I like the fact that this Bryce Canyon showed good speed in that one-mile dirt off-the-turf dirt race last time, provided outstanding fitness. Now goes to the turf, this regally bred colt. I don't think he's catching that tough a field. Brandon Walsh, 0-for-20 at Churchill. I look for him to turn things around at Keeneland. I got Bryce Canyon in race 10 today, 15-1, last-second Friday push. And then in the NFL, 2-0, Buffalo covered narrowly, luckily, fortunately, over over the Rams last week. This week, I'm going to take a home dog, Detroit Lions. They were missing their best offensive player, Kenny Galladay, for the first two games. They got him back last week. They went to Arizona, won a road game where they trailed in the fourth quarter and had to have a game-winning drive late. I think they're going to give New Orleans all they can handle at home in a close game, and they're getting 4.5 points. Detroit Lions are my NFL week four push.
Excellent. Well done. So 2-for-2 and streaking is James underscore Scully 111 on your Twitter dial and the Twin Spires blog team and Brisnet. And, of course, as we mentioned yesterday with both Dick Powell and Rich Ang, Gus Alonzo, Emily Gullickson, too, the optics team, tons and tons of options for opinion support, and including James. Best of luck this weekend. We'll do some recapping next week, and the big push toward Breeders' Cup continues.
Sounds good, Steve. Yeah, you have a great weekend, too. Thank you.
James Scully, everybody. We're going to take a break here. It's exactly 10 o'clock. We had a fast first hour, and you might have heard the reference when we had a chance to let Keith Shamblin appreciate his father and pay tribute. I mentioned two horsemen passing in the last 48 hours, and you may have seen that Bo Greeley passed. And then last night, Angel Montano, who is just a I'm an institution in Kentucky, and we're gonna get an opportunity. You're gonna slip in a visit with Willie Martinez, and Willie will pay tribute. He's gonna join us next for just a few minutes. Angel Montano, they have him down for 1,100 wins. He probably won closer to 2,000 because he. Is part of his career, first third, I guess, predated the Equibase statistics. I mean, he was around since 1960. They think of Churchill as the longest, the longest running, longest active horseman. He won training titles throughout Kentucky. Angel Montano was around so long that he won training titles at Miles Park. In addition to Churchill and Ellis and Turfway, Latonia, and just universally respected and well liked, big family, lost his wife I think a couple of years ago, and pretty sad. I want to get I reached out to Willie, who's one of my favorite people, and I haven't talked to him in a while. Willie Martinez will tell you about Angel Montano when we get back. We've got Marcus Hirsch coming up as well, and Hammer, and Dave Grenig, and Nick Tamaro. Stay with us. Hour two at the races after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced, scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick.